Welcome to Rants and Reason Podcast. I am Chuck.
And I am Karen.
I am a liberal.
And I am a conservative. But we are not enemies. We are friends.
We are friends most of the time.
Yeah, most of the time.
Most of the time we're friends.
Until he gets mad when I'm right and he's not. But most of the time we're friends.
Well, this is our first podcast.
It is.
This is Rants and Reason.
Yes. Chuck, why don't you tell everybody about yourself?
Well, I am actually on two other podcasts, one called History Dweebs, one called Deadball. One is a true crime kind of comedy. One is a kind of a baseball one.
Both great. Both very fun. You should check them out. Unless you're easily offended, and then don't check out History Dweebs. But
they're not ones you want to check out.
No, they're not kid friendly. But
no, they're not at all. Okay. I'm just a normal guy. I get up and I go to work every day. I have four kids. Mm-hmm. I'm old, you know, so I've seen a lot of things. I'm pretty old. I work for the government, so there's that.
You have a bird's eye view.
Yeah, I have a bird's eye view of what's going on. Mm-hmm. I see the good, the bad, and the ugly. Really, and this kind of came about because we met at a podcast meetup, and we talked about politics, and I found out you were a conservative, and you found out I was a liberal, and we found it strange that we agreed on so many things.
Right.
Obviously, we disagree on a few things.
And that's exactly what we're going to be talking about and figuring out and kind of trying to set up as an example within this podcast. I do not host any podcasts except this one. I am a mother of three teenagers, so if I sound a little crazy, that is why. I am busy with a lot of things, but there's a lot of irons in the fire. I've got a lot going on. We are a military family, and we're stationed here in the Midwest. And in flyover country. So I kind of have probably a little bit of a conservative bent due to that. That's part of it. And I have also worked for the government. I used to work for FEMA in emergency management during a lot of hurricane cleanup and tornado cleanup and things like that. And I gleaned a lot from that experience too, and just my childhood. I'm looking forward to discussing things with someone who I value their opinion. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I really do.
Well, we have very different opinions on many things, but we have, and I think part of our frustration when we were in Cincinnati, I think we had kind of this moment that we had this realization that why did we agree on so many things? If you're a Republican, mm-hmm. as you are, and I'm a Democrat, mm-hmm. why do we agree on so many things? But the people that we pay, the people that we have elected, that we've sent to Washington to represent us, can't agree on anything.
Right. And it's finding that place of agreement that it's my personal goal for this podcast. There's a couple of things that that I have as my goal. And one of the things is that just the difference in the polarity of the parties between Republicans and Democrats. In 1994, I don't know if you knew this, Chuck, but in 1994, 23% of Republicans were considered more liberal than the average Democrat, and 17% of Democrats were more conservative than the average Republican. Now, the poll I was reading was in 2014, but that was 3%. 3% of Republicans were more liberal than the average Democrat, and 1% of Democrats were considered more conservative than Republicans. So that's a pretty massive difference in a relatively short amount of time. And I think because of that polarity, we've created these divisions between people that make us all very unlikable people. we kind of are ending up in an echo chamber and dividing, making our social groups very tribal and just people who are just like us. And I was reading a pretty interesting article in Forbes on likability. And some of the main things that make a person unlikable is that they have a closed mind. They don't listen to another person. They have an over-emotional response. they don't ask enough questions and they take things too seriously. And I think that I'm seeing a lot of people in society do all of those things, and it's based on political belief. So basically what that boils down to is that we are all very unlikable people. And I, I personally would like to see that changed. So my goal for this podcast is to try to find the places where liberals and conservatives overlap. Let's try to find the differences instead of just generalizing each other and keeping us in that place. Let's try to figure out where we agree and try to find some places where we can unify instead of divide. So what are your goals? What is your ultimate goal for the podcast, Chuck?
Well, ultimately, my goal for this podcast is to show that I'm smarter than you.
Huh.
We've had a lot of conversations that we've had a lot of political conversations that
ended with me winning.
That often end with you feeling like you've won. Well, so my goal was to finally get a conservative that you could talk to and poke holes in their belief system. And my goal is to, by the end of this podcast, no matter how many it takes, is to have you be a raging liberal.
Oh.
So that's really what I'm setting out to do here. But no, really, I think one of the things that really bothers me, I live in a very Republican area. I live in one of the most Republican areas in the country. And the people that I know, all of my friends for the most part are Republican, and they're good people. And we've started to confuse ideas with people.
Yes.
And now I do not like many, many conservative ideas, but I like many conservative people. I think many conservative ideas are bad. I do not think that conservatives are bad people. And I think that is the biggest problem in our country right now, politically.
Right. We're personalizing. I absolutely agree.
We tend to view people in that light, that if they hold this belief, that belief is bad, they must be bad.
Right.
Well, we don't even have conversations. And my interest always had been in history and philosophy primarily, but I've always been interested in politics. But it's very frustrating because you tend to have conversations. You can only have conversations with people who, as you said, are in your tribe. Mm-hmm. If they're outside of your tribe, they don't even want to have a conversation. You can't even have one because it just becomes hostile very quickly.
It does.
And we've lost, I think what we've really lost is the exchange of ideas.
Mm-hmm.
What, you know, you worked for FEMA, so you saw that the government actually can do good things. Everybody has their own experience, but so that's really kind of my goal. And that's what, I think that's what started this, you know, is we started writing a blog and to try to just, I think the frustration that we both had to try to just release that through a blog and writing things down. And we thought, you know, just give it a voice
and make
a podcast.
And we thought we might not be the only, I mean, we know we're not the only people that feel that way. And I think a lot of people just stay quiet because everyone is so passionate about one thing or the other. They're either super passionate on one side or they're super passionate on the other. And the people who kind of have beliefs in both camps just don't speak. And we wanted to give a voice to those people. We kind of wanted to reinvent the center because that sort of has gotten squished. And, you know, the center doesn't seem to exist anymore. And that's really where things get done. So
an example of this is the election. I mean, look, if you look at the election beforehand, no poll in the world had Trump winning.
Mm-hmm.
No poll. And so many polls actually had basically a 0%. I mean, 538 missed it so badly, and they never miss them. And it was because people that were going to vote for Trump were afraid to even tell pollsters that they were going to vote.
Right. Polls have been so off because of that very thing. People are just very uncomfortable with.
And we've divided ourselves up into, as you said, into tribes, into camps where we don't even want to hear what the other side has
to say. If we step one foot out of that camp, then we're considered a traitor. I know as a Republican, if you even consider having a compassionate view on immigration in some regards, you're immediately considered a rhino. Republican in name only. And we need to be able to have an exchange of ideas without being a traitor to the cause. So
what's your idea? Now, I have my own. Mm-hmm.
But we're not talking about that right now. We're going to do that in the future, what we believe, right?
No, I mean, as far as what a conservative is.
Okay.
And I have my view. Mm-hmm. You know, they have cloven hooves and horns and things like that.
Pitchforks. We're just ready to throw at you. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. They're coming here and foreclosing on orphanages and things like that. Right. But what would you say that, I mean, how would you define what a conservative is? What is a conservative to you?
Well, I can define what traditional conservatism is, but to me, it is traditional. It's holding to the belief of the wisdom of the ancestors and to not rush in, to use prudence. And I think that I like structure. And to me, the conservative party is a party that is more structured. And it's kind of like you walk down a hallway and there's two doors on either side of you, and you can open the door that you know what's going to be there. And you might not necessarily like what's behind that door, but you know what's going to be there. And the other door, if you open it, you have no idea what's going to be there. Conservatism to me is opening the door that you know what's going to be there. I think it's much, much better to take a slow approach to change, depending on what the change is, of course, but it's better to take a slow approach to change because you can't go backwards. You can't, once you give up your liberty or your freedom to a bigger entity, you can't really take that back.
And by a bigger entity, you mean the government?
The federal government typically, as a whole. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
And I think that's one of the differences is the views on, I mean, that's kind of essentially the biggest difference in the views is that a liberal and a conservative's view of what government should be.
Right. Right. You're absolutely right.
What role they should play in your life.
Right. How would you define being a liberal? What would be the ultimate definition of that in your mind?
And I think I'll define a liberal and contrast it to what I thought a conservative believes. But I think liberals believe, my version of liberals, I believe that government is there, that, you know, we're this tribe of people and we band together and put people in charge to solve problems, our government is here to provide equal opportunity and equality for everyone. We believe that it's the duty of the government to kind of alleviate social ills, poverty, poor health care, things like that. Mm-hmm. Also to protect civil liberties and individual rights. And I think that we believe that the role of the government should be to guarantee no one is ever in need, that we have a country that's wealthy enough that no one should ever be in need. And I think the difference, how I see the difference is that conservatives believe that they want the government out of their life, think that they can take care of things themselves if the government doesn't get in the way. And liberals tend to have a view of that the government can do a lot of things to make your life better.
Mm-hmm. I think one thing that's misunderstood about conservatives, and don't get me wrong, there are definitely radicals within the conservative movement that I would not align myself to in most circumstances, but I think most of us believe in limited government rather than no government. It's just that we have to trust that what decisions are being made by the government are going to be in our best interest and to ensure our freedom. And that's the difference. It doesn't mean no government. It's not freedom from government. It's just a limited government and holding a check and balances so that we don't give too much power to a government that changes.
Well, and I think that we need to make clear here, too, that both of us, while you are a conservative and a Republican, I'm a liberal and a Democrat, we're both very moderate.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So we're very close to the center.
Right.
And that is where we found ourselves being the odd man out.
Right.
Because our leadership is not in the center anywhere.
Right, right, exactly. And who was...
Although the population is.
Right, and that's that. Therein lies the problem. What you mentioned earlier, something I definitely agree with, that really the essence of the argument between the two groups, it's not all these hot button issues that the news talks about or that people get so angry about. What it really is the role of government in our lives. And that's a spectrum. And being on two different places on that spectrum should not be a reason to hate one another. It just shouldn't. And that's...
It's a stupidity. I mean, it's an ignorance that you're looking at someone and their views. And first of all, assuming that... Mm-hmm. Thinking that you're smarter than them.
Right.
I mean, you...
And we all have different life...
You have to able to make... No, you just have to be able to make your case. Mm-hmm. We've reached the point, and my son, this really bothered him because... And he's very liberal. He went to DePaul. And Milo Yiannopoulos was supposed to speak at DePaul. And he was basically chased out of DePaul. He could not speak. He was chased from the auditorium, basically, mm-hmm. by social justice groups. Mm-hmm. And to my son, who was very liberal, he believed that he equated it with book burning.
Well,
because if you're not going to defend, if a person has bad ideas, let them put them out there, mm-hmm. and then tear the ideas down.
Right.
It's not about tearing the people down or shutting them up.
Right.
Or shouting over them. And that's really what this has become about, shouting over everyone.
I agree. And what we also need to understand is that we are shaped by our life experiences. And we're all going to have different life experiences. And we don't often respect that. We tend to think that we live...
And which is funny, because in getting to know you, mm-hmm. we've had very, very similar life experiences.
Right. What are the life experiences that led you to become a liberal? I would like to hear that.
Well... Like, I grew up in government housing. I grew up in a housing project. There were maybe, counting me and my brother and my family, there were probably three or four white families in the projects. Mm-hmm. And what I saw, and again, I'm old, so this is going back a ways, but what I saw were a lot of people working really hard. I mean, these were people that there were families, and they worked hard, and there was this American dream that you kept being told about, that if you worked hard and you did the right things and you did everything right and played by the rules, that you were going to get ahead. Mm-hmm. But I never saw anyone get ahead. I never saw anyone get ahead. And everybody was getting up and going to work every day, mm-hmm. but they still had nothing. They still have very, very little. And the thing that kept us from being just dead broke was the government. It was food stamps. It was government cheese.
Okay. I'm going to interrupt you for just a minute because we've had this discussion and I think that the listeners need to hear about this also. And the name of the podcast is Rants and Reason. And so I'm going to go on a bit of a rant here. Government cheese. Right. I also had government cheese. And for those that don't know, it comes in like one big gelatinous block, right?
It's much like, it was shaped like Velveeta.
Only it was larger and shakier. Like
there was a lot of words on the package to describe what it was.
And none of those words were cheese.
Well, I believe the cheese was used as like cheese product, you know, pasteurized
whey that tastes like somewhat Velveeta, cheese-ish. You know. No,
yeah.
It was so much worse than Velveeta.
I think orange might have been on there. And I know that you could not... I know for a fact that you could not
melt
this cheese.
Right.
It would become clear, like, but it would not melt.
Both literally and metaphorically.
Exactly. But they made the best grilled cheese sandwiches in the world. I mean, until you've had a government cheese grilled cheese sandwiches, you have not had a grilled cheese sandwich.
But you do find out about those grilled cheese sandwiches later when you have gastrointestinal issues. And you do pay for the government cheese in scans and medical scans and different, I believe you had a colonoscopy lately, right? There. Like that.
Yeah, actually, having the colonoscopy prep still didn't flush out the cheese from when I was 8 years old.
They're like, what is this? What is the substance? So, but they did feed you with the government cheese. So there's that.
And there was food. And my mom went to work every day. Mm-hmm. My dad died when I was young. And then I grew up. And not grew up, but I came of age in the Reagan years. Mm-hmm. Not a deep, deep thinker. There was this thing called Reaganomics. And the theory was that we're going to cut the taxes of the wealthy people. And because they're going to have more money, they're going to be so good-natured, because people are so good-natured, they're just going to give this money to poor, middle-class, and poorer people. And I thought, well, that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. Why don't you just cut the taxes of the middle class and the poorer people so they are sure to get the money? But we were told that this will happen. Let's just make things easier for rich people. And to me, I thought, well, rich people kind of have it easy enough. Why can't we make it easier for poor people? Because it seems that things are a little tougher on them. And we were one of the poor people. Mm-hmm. And by any measure, Reaganomics and trickle-down economics, it just doesn't work. So I felt like I just was on a different playing field. I felt like the rules were being made, and I still feel that way. The rules are made to favor one group. And I always say that one of the reasons I'm a liberal is for the same reason that baseball players are superstitious. And I was a baseball player, and I was very superstitious. And the reason is that baseball players who make it, I obviously never came close to making it to the major leagues, but baseball players who make it to the major leagues know one thing for sure, that they are lucky. They know that they are lucky because they know for every one of them, there are 50 guys who worked just as hard, who were just as good, who put in all the hours, who practiced, who did everything, but they had bad luck. And it's usually them getting hurt, getting injured, or whatever. And those people didn't make it. You know, so baseball players, you know, they're superstitious because they know they're lucky and they don't want that luck to end. Because they know that there are people that they, but for the grace of God, could be that guy who blew out his arm or blew out his elbow or did whatever. Mm-hmm. So I think that I have always looked at it as I know what it's like to be poor, and I know what the government can do to help people. And I've seen it, and I've seen it work. And even in my job, I've seen it work. That's what I do for a living. So that's really what has made me a liberal. And I find it very, very interesting that you come from a very, very similar background.
It mirrors.
And you're a conservative.
Right.
Yeah, you come from, and so tell me how you became a conservative.
Well, my background is very similar. My father abandoned my family when I was 2. So my mother raised me as a single mother. She had a college education, and she came from an upper middle class family. So it was not familiar to her to be in this situation. I had a grandmother that needed constant care. So my mother was her caregiver and mine. And my mom worked as a social worker, ironically enough. And I saw a lot of interesting situations through that growing up. But despite the fact that my mom worked, there was a lot of emotional strain and a lot of different circumstances that led her to no longer be able to work. And we ended up living in low-income housing. And we were on food stamps, and like you, definitely the minority in our housing project. And my view was very different. I don't know if it's the decade was different and life was just different a few years after your experience. I'm really not sure, but it was the exact opposite. I saw a lot of people with the capacity to work that didn't. And it didn't matter what race they were or what gender they were. There were a lot of people who were very, very capable people who believed that they weren't. They didn't work, and they were completely dependent on what the government was giving. And it was almost like it created this stagnation where people were afraid to be successful. If someone worked and worked their, just clawed their way out of it. They were just made fun of. They were treated with disdain. It was like culture just pulled you down and you couldn't move forward. You couldn't excel in school. If you did, you were made fun of and you couldn't. It was just a culture that was not, being dependent on the government was not a good thing. It was not a step up. You mentioned earlier, you know, that your mother received food stamps and worked at the same time, and that gave her kind of a step forward. In my situation, the more benefits we received, the more it gave my mom reason to not work because she wasn't making enough. It was like she could subsist better on government assistance than she was able to without it. And
well, I think one of the problems that we've done, and I think this is part of, and we'll get into this later mm-hmm. in much more detail, the Clinton welfare reform, mm-hmm. it kind of made it an all or nothing thing. It did sometimes dissuade people from working because if you couldn't go to work for a certain amount of money, mm-hmm. you were going to lose a lot of things that you had just by not working.
Right, right. Well, I know that in my situation, my mom could have worked. She was very, very educated. She was very well trained in her job. But the more that she surrounded herself with an entitlement safety net, the more she adapted to that. And I saw the people around me doing the same thing. And and at that point, it's like they could no longer be functional in a working class society. That just, everything in that screamed out to me, this is not what I want. This is not what I believe in. This is not what this country is about. Because I truly believe that other than people who are born into wealth, and I know that we're going to be talking about inherited wealth in the future, but I believe that we are born with the same capacity, the same ability to work hard and create a life for ourselves. It doesn't mean that we all are going to be on that same level at the end of the day, but we all have an ability to be. Most of us have an ability to be successful to some degree. And I just don't believe there was ever a specific mandate that we were all going to be reach the same level of what success is. And I don't believe in a utopian idea that we're all supposed to reach the same level of success. Success looks different for different people, but I believe we're all capable of success to the degree that we can be. And I saw people not doing that. I saw people not rising to their potential. And it just went against every fiber of my being. And I watched a lot of people kind of almost become lethargic. The compromise of not working, like it paralyzed them, an entire community of people.
That's an important point that you make, because I think that we'll get into this again later. I think we're going to reach a point because of automation and things like that, that we're going to reach a point that everyone's going to get a basic income mm-hmm. or a maintenance income. But I do think that people, your identity, I mean, you get a lot of identity from what you do. Mm-hmm. A great part of your identity is what you do. You know, mine is, you know, my job and being a father. Yours is, you know, an educator and a mother. And if you don't have a job and you're not working, you tend to, I think you tend to lose your identity a little bit mm-hmm. and not have that. And there's something that, I don't know where I was going with that, to be honest. And that's one thing you'll find on that I tend to do is head down paths that I don't really know where I'm going. But I think that, you know, you make a good point there, and I think that we have people who could be productive who aren't. I think right. that's a thing that liberals have to acknowledge, is that we have a lot of people in this country who could be productive, but they're not. The other thing that you have to acknowledge is that there's less and less and less opportunity for people to do well.
I disagree with that. It's a fundamental disagreement. I think that there's less conventional opportunity. I think you have to think outside the box, and I think there has to be training in specific areas. But I don't believe that there's less opportunity as a whole. I think it just depends on how you look at it.
Things are so much different than when I was in. And when I talk about opportunity, the world has changed and this country has changed. And I think this is where the government needs to intervene. You know, my kids went to college. They went to college on scholarships. Had they not gone to had scholarships because they're twins, it would have cost me over $100,000 a year. Mm-hmm. Now, I hear people my age all the time, and this is what's changed, say, I worked my way through college. How in the world is a kid going to make $50,000 a year to pay for college? So these kids are coming out. They have tons of debt. And firstly, we're telling everybody, you need to go to college to be successful. And I'm getting off on a tangent, and this is one of my own little rants, but we tell everybody you need to go to college or you're a failure. Because if you're a plumber, you're wasting your life.
Right, but that's education. You know? Why does it have to be your version of education? That's something I could rant about for a really long time. You know,
no, I mean, education that's, is as, education. As a
doesn't have to be a
country. Mm-hmm. But do you see what I mean, though? As a country, we've kind of become conditioned to believe if you don't go to a traditional four-year college, if you don't get a college degree, you're not going to have opportunity.
Right.
Well, what a lot of these kids are just getting is debt.
Right.
They're not getting a degree. They're not getting an education.
Or certification.
And if you if you become a heating and HVAC guy, somehow you're a failure. So I think that's where I talk about lack of opportunity, because we're not putting kids on the right path.
Right. And that's my point is it's not a lack of opportunity. It's a lack of how it's presented.
But we are moving to the jobs that used to be there. When I was 18 years old, mm-hmm. you could come out of high school. You could go to work for a manufacturing company. This is how old I am. And you were if you got a job at GE, you were taken care of for life. If you got a job at a machine tool shop or a manufacturing place, you stayed there, you made a good living, you joined the union, you were fine.
Right.
And those things have disappeared. And now it's really, we've shifted to a service economy, and there is not the opportunity. My kids are smarter than me, but that's, you know, the bar's not real high for that.
I disagree.
But they have less opportunity than I did. And that's the thing that I've seen change over the years. So,
well, I think preparing my kids for where your kids are at now, I'm veering them towards learn a trade first and use that trade to help you get through college. I plan to help pay for them and then like let them play a part in that too. I'm really big on trades. I think that it's, you know, there's still a lot of, as we're researching, we're seeing a lot of trades sitting empty. And yes, you have to adapt to technology. You have to adapt to automation. There's a lot of truth to that. You definitely have to look at different careers. You have to research and you have to put forth the effort. And that's what I think a lot of the problem is we live in a society that is very, very lazy. People don't want to put in the effort. They want someone to tell them, well, these are the careers that are available. Pick this career. They don't want to put in the research themselves. And there's just more opportunity. It's just a little harder to find. You have to dig for it. You have to want to find it. So,
well, there's right now there's enough opportunity, and we both agree on that. And I'm in workforce development.
Right. So you That's would know I better than I in a lot of those. Right.
And you know, and I'm constantly pumping the trades, but telling people this is what your 18-year-old should be thinking about when he gets out of school. Mm-hmm. But that's a tangent, I guess, for another day.
Right. And it will be. In fact, there's a lot of different tangents we're planning on going on. Kind of excited about what we're going to be talking about. I don't know if it'll interest anybody else, but we're going to have fun either way.
And, you know, hopefully we're going to have like 8 listeners. What our goal is, to have 8 listeners.
Yes.
Once we can get 8. We're going to be fine.
Dweebs, just love us enough to give us a few listeners. Just make it worth the effort. If you can just do that for us, that would be great. I say dweebs because I'm talking about to the History Dweeb listeners. But we're going to love all you guys that take the time to listen. We really appreciate it. And girls, guys and girls. So some of the things we're going to be talking about in future podcasts, the next one we're going to do, I'm kind of excited about. It's an open letter to our own parties, because there's a lot that I want to say to my fellow Republicans, especially right now. I'm using my kindergarten voice. This is the voice I use with my children when I just can't take it anymore. And that's sort of how I feel about some of the things happening in the Republican Party right now. So there's a lot of things I want to say to my own party. And I think that Chuck kind of feels the same way, right?
Well, my party got beat by Donald Trump. So
so did mine.
I have a lot of things to say. Well, that's true. But yeah, my party, you know, keeps, and there was a TV show, Newsroom, and I think the guy said, you know, it was on the TV show, and he said, if liberals are so smart, why do they lose so damn much? And I think that's what I'm getting tired of, is losing so damn often.
Right.
So, yeah, we're both going to be talking about the problems that we have with our own party. We're going to get into what creates some of the problems,
right,
what we think are some of the biggest problems, like the 24-hour news cycle.
Yes, I can't wait to talk about that. I have so many opinions. I think that's the leading cause of the divisions between people. So I'm excited to talk about that. I think we're going to tackle gun control. I know you are.
Campaign finance.
Right.
Is to me, the biggest thing in the world. If you're going to change politics, you have to start with campaign finance. And I think if you did that, we would start to see true representation.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to do one on that.
Right. We're going to tackle immigration. We're going to solve all the world's problems. I think you are super excited to tackle whether Reagan was a legend or a myth. I think we're going
to
have...
I am very excited to take that one on. Very excited to take the Gipper on. We're going to do one about... But because he's so contradictory.
Right.
And there's so many contradictions with Reagan. And he's a great example of how things are today. I mean, Reagan would not be elected by his own party today.
Yeah, it's very interesting because Reagan is who inspired me as a kid. And he's who directed your path in the opposite direction. So I think that'll be a really interesting thing to talk about. I think we're going to go ahead.
Do some on clowns. We're going to have some clown ones because people are afraid of clowns. So we're going to do some scary ones.
Yeah, the problem with that
keep
is
you up late at night.
That wouldn't be controversial because universally hated.
Yeah, that's one thing I think Republicans and Democrats can agree on.
Yes, which is sad.
Everybody hates clowns.
Because, you know, clowns started out really trying to help people. Speaking of clowns, this is completely off subject now, and we're just going completely off the rails, but I believe you were almost kidnapped by John Wayne Gacy at one point. Is that correct?
That's a story for another day, but I don't hitchhike when you I was 17 when he was around, and don't hitchhike, kids. It's not a good
that's
thing.
A clown that you probably should avoid.
That's
men
avoid.
Dressed as clowns when hitchhiking.
Yeah, he doesn't juggle. He's not fun.
Well, it depends. It depends on how you define juggling.
That's true. Yeah. That's very, very true.
So
but we're gonna do a lot of things if we can get along. We might just do two podcasts and say, you know what? You're ignorant. I can't take you anymore.
I'm pretty spirited. I mean, I'm really hard to get along with, so I don't know if you're going to be able to handle it, because I'm pretty mean, can't you tell?
But we'll see how it turns out. Yeah. And hopefully, like I said, I have four kids, so I believe I could probably get two of them to listen. You have two that you can make listen. So we can give, you know, I'm sure we can get 10 listeners.
I think we can. I think that's the goal.
If we do that, and I don't really care, because I will talk. I will sit in the dark and talk.
You are the reason that we named the show Rants and Reason, because you are not the reason. You are the rant.
Yeah, I like to rant.
Yes, you do.
And I didn't rant tonight.
No, but you will.
But I will. You can count on rants. But yeah, I will. You know, I'll sit in the dark and talk.
Chuck does not hold back. He does not.
I do not care if people listen.
And he does not care if you like him. So...
No, I don't.
No.
I don't care if the only person, I care about one person liking me, and I think you know who that is.
Yeah, I think everyone does, so.
That's Rudy.
Yes, right.
So as long as I'm good on his side, we're good. So.
Rudy is your dog. You forgot to mention that when you were mentioning your children. I really think that Renee would be horrified. Your wife would be horrified to know that you did not mention Rudy.
Well, she thinks Rudy is her dog. So.
Oh, so that doesn't count. It's just her child, not yours.
Right. Yeah,
I see. So. I see how that is. Well,
so that is what we have for tonight.
Yeah.
But there will be a lot more. This was just kind of an intro.
And if you would like to read more about our stories and you would like to know more, we do have a blog. Chuck, you want to tell everybody about that?
We have a blog where we put our thoughts to paper, so to speak.
Screen. we put our thoughts
at
to screen.
rantsandreason.org.
Right. And it's
that's how this whole thing got started. We do have a Facebook page that we don't have anybody following us because
we didn't tell anybody.
We haven't told anyone.
Right.
So
we've been all secret
squirrel. We'll be telling people about that soon.
Yeah. So like us on Facebook. Even if you don't like us, just make us look like you like us. Because
yeah, make us feel like you like
right.
us. We're one of us is a nice person.
I'm really stressed out. I have to tell the truth. I'm a little stressed out because I like people to like me. And when people find out that I'm kind of a conservative, it's not going to go well. But I love you guys. Even if you're really, really mad at me to find out that I'm a conservative, just be kind, please. Just be kind. Well,
And this is the reason I decided to do the show with you is because you love Bruce Springsteen.
I definitely appreciate Bruce. Yes. Yes. And so, I do know that is who developed a lot of your ideology. So
that is actually you had Ronald Reagan, I have Bruce Springsteen.
So. So we all have our people. There was one more thing I was going to say. I can't remember what it was. Oh, on the Facebook group, that's a place where we want people to engage in conversation. We want both liberals and conservatives and moderates to all be able to have a conversation without reducing to name calling. I absolutely, one thing I cannot stand is when I'm reading a news story and I read the comments and people say libtard or they say Republican, and we don't need
snowflake.
Right. We just don't need to do that. It's so It doesn't do anything. So we would love for people to engage on the Facebook page. But if you do, keep the name calling off of it. But we really want to hear from you. We want to hear your opinion and we want to engage in real conversation and give people kind of, you know, a place where we can actually talk and be a society again. So
exchange ideas.
Yes.
Because nobody can name call like I can. So if we get into name calling, I can name
them. Right. So just don't even try because Chuck will win. And I will go hide in a corner and cry because I don't like anybody to be sad ever. So.
Well, thank you for listening.
Yes.
Karen, thank you for doing this.
Yes, it's going to be super fun. I'm excited. Thank you.
And we will talk to you next time.
All right. Bye, guys and girls.
Good night.
Night.